From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Running San Francisco's Municipal Transportation Agency, or SFMTA, is widely regarded as one of the toughest local government jobs in the country. It's a complicated system that includes buses, underground trains, cable cars, and streetcars, not to mention the interaction with bicycles and scooters, plus all the non-transit issues like homelessness. Well, the city has just hired a new SFMTA director, and Jeffrey Tumlin joins us for the hour to talk about his plans for the agency. And we'll get started right after the news. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, whether you use public transit or not, almost everyone in San Francisco comes in contact with the city's transportation agency, or SFMTA, or some like to call it Muni. More than 700,000 passengers ride the city's buses, trains, cable cars, and streetcars. And, you know, even if you walk or ride a bike or scooter, you're still going to have to deal with public transit in one way or another. And now the city has hired a new SFMTA director, a self-described transit geek. He's been a transit planner advising cities and transit agencies for more than two decades. Jeffrey Tumlin will be on the job starting in about 3 weeks, but he's here today to talk about his plans and the challenges his agency faces. Jeffrey Tumlin, welcome to Forum.
Good morning. I'm so excited to be on KQED.
Well, good to have you. And let me just first ask you, we're here in our downtown studios. How did you get here? How was your commute?
I lucked out and was able to get a 24 bus to a L train. Little slow moving in the subway this morning.
Did you get caught up in that? There was some flooding situation between Church and Van Ness, I think.
The flooding was cleared late last night. Service is operating more or less normally today. But yeah, subway broke last night because of the torrential rains.
Well, as I said, you don't take over for 2.5 weeks or so, but you're already not that. I'm sure you knew because you use transit all the time, but you know the myriad ways in which the system can break down, many of which are not really Muni's or the SFMTA's fault at all.
That's right. We have an extraordinarily complex and old system. There are few transportation systems anywhere in the world with the level of complexity as San Francisco's, and that means there's lots of vulnerable spots, as well as some decades of deferred maintenance problems that we need to catch up with.
So as someone who uses Muni, I know you ride your bike a lot as well, you know, just as a user, like what do you see as the big weak spots for the system?
So there's weak spots everywhere in the system that are rooted in its complexity. So the fact that we have five surface lines that turn into one subway, that offers some complexity that creates a weakness in some bottleneck situations that results in some reliability problems.
Talking about like around Church Street?
Yeah, well, both Church and DeBose, but also at West Portal as well, where you have three lines converging in the middle of a neighborhood commercial district.
But that's a planning issue from decades ago, right?
That's a planning issue from many decades ago and from decades when we used to actually couple train cars at West Portal. When I first moved to San Francisco in the early 90s, I'd take a K train from the Ingleside and it would join up with an L train from Terravalle before entering the subway.
They literally hook them together.
They would literally hook together. And sometimes that hooking process didn't really work so well and we'd be stuck at West Portal Station for a half an hour while they jiggled with things.
So that seems like something that, I don't know, can't be changed much. But what are some other things that perhaps would be more amenable to some policy changes?
Well, so policy changes include things like getting cars out of the way of our buses and trains. And we're making really good progress in San Francisco on dedicated transit lanes for Muni, for both the buses and the streetcars. We can do more of that. And we've actually gotten remarkably good at doing that quickly. It's another problem, I think, perhaps the weakest point in San Francisco, is typically how long it takes to get anything done here.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a second. But as somebody who lives in the Mission, who does drive and take public transit and bikes and all those things, you mentioned those transit-only lanes. And Mission Street seemed to pop up almost overnight. And it forces you to make right-hand turns sometimes, and it can be really frustrating as a driver, and I'm sure merchants sometimes complain about that as well. Is that just something we're going to have to live with because we have too many cars on the streets already and we need to make room for the buses?
So we have a simple geometry problem in San Francisco. The city is growing. Jobs are increasing. More people are moving here. Our streets are not getting any wider. So our challenge is, how do we manage the streets that we've got in order to move more people, and in particular to emphasize moving the people who have the fewest choices?
Meaning?
Meaning, you know, I'm rich. I can buy my way out of traffic congestion by getting an e-bike or, you know, calling up a Lyft or a flywheel taxi. Lower-income folks or folks who are working three jobs have less flexibility than I do.
So you're talking about transit equity?
That's right.
And just, you know, go run with that. What does that mean? Like, what are you going to do about it?
Well, so part of our challenge is the way that we have dealt with transportation nationally over the last 100 years. We have not focused on the movement of people, but rather the movement of vehicles. So up until 2 years ago, the way that San Francisco measured the success of the transportation system was through a metric called level of service, or LOS, which measures the seconds of delay that a motor vehicle experiences at an intersection in the peak 15 minutes of the peak hour. It's a measure of congestion. And we hate congestion, and level of service is a measure of congestion, so it's the perfect metric for transportation, except that what it says is that if you are a person on board a 60-passenger bus, you are valued at 1/60th the value of somebody driving alone in a car or riding in the back of an Uber. If you're on foot or on bike, it's not that you don't matter at all. It's that you matter only insofar as you slow down the people who really matter, who are the people in cars.
So is that a mindset change, or how does that translate into a policy or funding priorities?
Well, since 1973, San Francisco has had a transit first policy, which says that we're going to place the highest priority on the most space efficient modes of transportation: transit, walking, biking. However, there was a complete disconnect in San Francisco, like all other cities, between the policy language and the actual metrics and budgeting for how we manage the city. That has finally changed. Sarah Jones, who's my planning director at the SFMTA, did the intense staff work 2 years ago to look at the DNA of decision making in San Francisco and note where the way we made decisions and funded projects completely contradicted the adopted policy language from our Board of Supervisors and from the voters.
So does that mean that now we've got all that figured out and there's enough money? I mean, is funding not a problem anymore?
So funding is a part of the problem. We could do a lot more and do more faster with funding. But there is still a lot of work that we can do making better use of our existing infrastructure. And what stands in our way is politics and the difficulty we have in San Francisco making decisions around change.
And I want to come back to that. But let me open the phone lines, because I know just from the tweets we've gotten since we announced you were going to be here today that a lot of people have comments to make. So we're going to open up the phone lines. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or if you prefer, you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Politics and policy and the convergence of those things in San Francisco. How big a part of the job you're taking on is navigating the politics going to be?
That's probably the majority of my job. I have phenomenally talented staff at the SFMTA. Arguably, in fact, let me just state, San Francisco has the greatest collection of talent of any municipal department of transportation in the country. The challenge for Muni and the agency in general is largely external. And so that's a big focus of my job, is clearing a path for my phenomenally talented staff.
So what does that mean? Is because you have to deal with the public.
That's right.
So is it I think at one point you tweeted that you wanted to make the agency more transparent, which I assume is aimed at the public, right?
Absolutely.
Letting people know what's going on. But yeah, as you know, I mean, I joke sometimes there isn't a tree in this town that doesn't have a constituency. Or a parking space, yeah. So what does that mean you're going to deal with the politics? How do you make it better?
So the way I work with change management is starting with values. And we're fortunate in San Francisco that we have pretty clear values as a people, and it's a progressive city. So part of our task is articulating exactly what are San Francisco values.
But let me just stop you there, because we don't all have the same values. I mean, if you're a driver, you have one maybe set of transportation values. If you're a bicyclist, you have a different set. And, you know, all and just go right on down the line.
So I don't start values with modal priority or thinking about self-interest. I start about what kind of a people are we? Who do we prioritize? Is my role in San Francisco to focus on my own self-interest or the public good? What do we mean by the public good? Should we prioritize the most vulnerable or the most privileged? Should I use the limited right-of-way I have to create more exquisite convenience for the rich or to accommodate the basic needs and opportunities of people who are low-income or disabled or elderly? Transportation is oftentimes a zero-sum game because of the limitations on street width. We have to use our values in order to decide, how do we take this 80 feet of street width and allocate it to achieve the highest public good?
And so what does that mean when, you know, getting a little deeper into this idea of transit equity? Does that mean more bus and other kinds of transit service into areas of the city that don't have it now? Does it mean putting more resources on, say, the T3rd, you know, which serves the Bayview?
So part of it is about space and another part is about time. So if I look at a neighborhood like parts of the outer Excelsior or the Bayview, how many jobs can I access from those neighborhoods within 30 minutes? And what does it cost to get to those jobs? So if transportation is really about delivering opportunity, what can I do at the SFMTA in order to make sure that our residents in the Bayview have expanded access to employment and schools and other opportunities to increase their incomes in the face of rising rent?
So I know that I read that you also want to push for more housing. And I assume you may, I shouldn't assume, but you may support Senator Scott Wiener's bill to have more dense housing around transit hubs and transit corridors. I mean, is that something that you see as part of your job to advocate for housing as the transit chief?
So as I've been going out to our maintenance shops and bus yards and other facilities around the city, I hear one primary theme, really, which is that we need more workers. We've got hundreds of vacancies at the SFMTA. In order to deliver the service that we need to deliver for the public, we need more operators. And the thing that's getting in the way of being able to bring in more operators are two things. One is partly bureaucratic. It's the HR structure, hiring takes forever. And our new HR director, Kim Ackerman, is on that. She understands the nature of that problem. We're working on it. But the other is that even though we're rapidly increasing worker pay, the price of housing is rising faster than pay is rising. And so my workforce is feeling like they have to commute from places like Patterson in order to get to work.
Where's that?
Exactly. So it's in San Joaquin County. So we, our workforce, like many in the city, like the restaurant industry would tell you, is increasingly having to try to attract workers from an hour and a half or 2 hours away.
Let me just push back, because this sounds like a great college seminar, but in reality, and we've seen the opposition to more housing, say, out in the Sunset. You know, they like their single-family homes. They're going to oppose vigorously tall buildings and just right on down the line. So, well, you know, I'm just wondering, where does the theory and the values, where does that clash with reality when it comes to people who turn out at meetings and that kind of thing?
So San Francisco and San Mateo counties have added 2,000 jobs every single month since 2011. And in that time, those counties have added about 400 housing units per month. So the math is pretty straightforward around why rents are rising. When we look at other regions that do produce housing, we see flat rents. Housing doesn't need to be in towers. You could double the density of the city by simply removing density controls on existing buildings and keeping heights relatively low. Paris is 3 times denser than San Francisco, and one would not argue that Paris is a horrible, unlivable city.
They also have a pretty vast metro system.
They do, and Zurich is another example that has no subways, where transit is about 80% of all trips, because they've designed the street system in order to prioritize the movement of buses and trams. So there's many choices. We could make San Francisco vastly more livable while at the same time meeting our housing needs to keep our city affordable and to welcome newcomers. Do you know how much income you have to earn in order to be able to rent a one-bedroom apartment?
I'm guessing $80,000, $90,000.
$120,000 a year is now the minimum income that you need in order to be able to afford a one-bedroom apartment as a newcomer in San Francisco.
By yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. We're talking with Jeffrey Tumlin. He will be the new director of Muni, or the SFMTA, starting December 16th.
16.
And if you want to join us, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And let's start with Mike in San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning. Good luck with your job, Jeffrey. As a longtime resident of San Francisco, I've always used a motorcycle or a Vespa for transportation. How do you plan to help integrate motorcycles and scooters into the city?
So I love thinking about transportation in terms of geometry and favoring those modes of transportation that allow me to move more people in the same amount of space. So motorcycles, Vespas, scooters, you know, electric assist push scooters, these are all modes that we're definitely interested in. And so serving them means obviously providing a place to park them that prioritizes, again, the most space-efficient forms of transportation. For the lighter, more human-scaled vehicles, it means creating a protected micromobility network across the city, like so many other cities have done before us. And for motorcycles, it means continuing to support my friends who ride motorcycles across the city.
Mike, does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you very much. Good luck in your job.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for that. I love personally, I do ride sort of the station bikes. I love the jump bikes. I like the scoots, not the ones you stand on, but the ones you sit on. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't I'm always frustrated by the lack of scoots that are available, because I think that's a great, those electric moped kinds of things. Why doesn't the city just get into that business? And, you know, because I think right now there are a limited number of those scooters, and it's a private company that runs them. Why doesn't the city augment that?
So the city, there's some things that I think public agencies are really good at. There are other things that public agencies, like, I don't think San Francisco needs to go into the mobility technology business. What we need to do is be better regulators of private companies that use the public right-of-way and regulate them for the public good. A problem with San Francisco's regulatory approach to micromobility has been that it's simply imitating the failed regulatory approaches for the taxicab industry, thinking about capping specific numbers to arbitrary levels rather than working with the mobility companies in order to regulate for better outcomes. So the problem with scooters is that there's a design flaw that they tip over and block sidewalks, and people ride them on sidewalks.
You're talking about the ones you sit on or the ones you stand on?
The ones that you stand on.
Okay.
Yep. And it is, there are other cities in North America that have regulated for outcomes and in their regulations have created very strong incentives and penalties to get the scooter operators to support good user behavior. Don't ride them on the sidewalk. Don't park them in places where you're going to block sidewalks.
But hasn't San Francisco done that?
We could do a better job.
In what way? And I should say, just in full disclosure here, my husband is a deputy city attorney who works on these issues for the SFMTA. Just get that out of the way. But, you know, what are you thinking when you say that?
So I'm thinking learning from cities like Santa Monica that have invested heavily in providing designated corrals for parking scooters to keep them off of the sidewalk and to keep them from tipping over. Here in San Francisco, we have gotten good at requiring tethering of scooters so that they don't tip over, that you've got to tie them up to something. That's a little bit better. But we can also do more with the scooter companies to provide, again, penalties and incentives that punish bad behavior and reward good behavior.
How satisfied are you with, the companies that do provide the bikes, the stationless and the station bikes? We're supposed to see some new e-bikes, the ones that lift or what's it called? Bay wheels now, I think it is. Had some problems. There were some caught on fire.
Yep. I'm very happy to have not only the bikes, but particularly the electric assist bikes back in San Francisco. As you may know, we have some topography in San Francisco, and the electric assist bikes make San Francisco flat. So getting them back is a huge priority, and then making sure that we have the right number so that they're reasonably available for people who need them, but at the same time, manage them so that they don't create adverse problems.
Should there be more of those, are you saying, or should they be in different places?
So that's a good question. Oakland regulates micromobility to require the providers who are interested in providing service downtown. They have to demonstrate that they're also serving neighborhoods that are predominantly low income and, that house people of color. So building in equity analytics into our regulatory framework is also super important.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Susan in San Francisco, you're next.
Hi. I have lived in San Francisco for a long time as a driver and resident in Sunset. Parking back in the day wasn't a big issue. But in the last few years, I have become dependent on the paratransit system. And I feel that the system is sort of like the bastard of the MTA, that there's not ever mention made of it as a service that is available. And as the population is aging in San Francisco, I feel more publicity should be used for it. There's also, it seems to me, whenever consideration is made for bike lanes or this and that, parklets, that no accommodation, or at least it's not mentioned, is made for paratransit vehicles, the taxi cabs, the ramp cabs that are available, or for just private drivers that have to let off someone who is disabled.
Susan, thanks for the comment. Jeff?
So as my mother was a paratransit user and dialysis patient for a long time, and so I have acute experience with not only paratransit, but particularly dealing with the particular mobility needs of people who are not fully able-bodied for whatever reason. If we are to have an equity agenda in San Francisco, you're right, we need to pay extra attention to those folks who have the fewest mobility choices and perhaps have greater needs than others. One of the things that we're working on at the SFMTA is making sure that we're not having single mode projects. I don't want to do any bike projects. I want to do street projects that pay attention to all the users of the roadway and also the quality of the roadway in order to support quality of life and local business success. We need to do a better job of managing our limited assets in order to achieve the public good.
Susan, thanks very much for the call. We're coming up on a break. Let me give out the number once again. It's 866-733-6786, 1-866-733-6786. Talking with Jeffrey Tumlin. He will be Muni's, or the SFMTA's, new director in about 2.5 weeks. If you'd like to talk with him, give us a call. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or if you prefer, you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. I'm not Michael Krasny. I'm Scott Schaefer. Michael is not here today, but we're going to be around for the rest of this hour with Jeff Tumlin. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny, and my guest is Jeffrey Tumlin. He is the new SFMTA, or Muni Director, if you prefer, and starts the job in a little over 2.5 weeks. Let's go to the phones, and again, the number, if you want to join us, is 866-733-6786, and let's go to Eileen in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity to call into your show. I'm listening with great interest. I'm a decades San Francisco resident. My kids were born here, and I'm a mom, and I have to drive. And sometimes I hear a lot about how, I'm listening and hearing, you know, people being categorized in San Francisco as the people who are disadvantaged and then the rich people. And I'm really taking objection to that because there's a whole giant group of us in the middle that are just trying to live here with our kids and our jobs and, you know, just trying to get around the city. I do drive, and I feel like, you know, there's a lot of issues at play. Like, unless you fix this, you know, public school system, lottery system, you can't not expect moms to need to get in their cars and drive their kids across town to school, necessarily. Not to mention, I'm a big supporter of mass transit. I would do it if I could, but I'm hauling a lot of stuff, right? I've got groceries, kids' stuff, all kinds of, you know, there's sports events that we got to shuttle all these kids to, and it's just not feasible on public transportation. So my comment really is, don't forget about us in the middle. And as you start to take all the lanes for mass transit, causing it even harder, making it even harder and harder for people to get around in their cars, don't forget that we also are living here and are trying to live here in San Francisco.
Eileen, thanks for that. Thank you very much. Jeffrey?
And Eileen, I completely agree with you. The challenge, though, with the limited geometry problem that we've got in San Francisco is that the only way that I can make it possible for people who need to drive to be able to continue driving is to make it easier for the rest of us to do something else. So I'm not a better person when I ride my bike than when I drive my car, but I do take up a tenth of the space. So making it possible for somebody like me who doesn't have kids to say, you know what, it just doesn't make sense for me to drive. It's going to be easier to do something else. I'm doing that so that the rest of San Franciscans, whatever they need to drive, can continue to do so.
If I am a driver, and let's say, and there are folks, I'm sure, who never use public transit or can't bike for one reason or another, or use a motor scooter, am I going to be unhappy with you?
I would hope that everyone is going to be exactly the same amount of unhappy with me.
Okay. What's your second choice?
So transportation is it's a competition between wants and needs. We effectively have limitless demand for mobility. As a government agency and as a city that has limited street right-of-way, I can't satisfy everyone's wants. So it is my job to make everyone a little bit unhappy. No, you can't drive all the way across town during rush hour and expect there to be no traffic. No, you can't take the bus and have it be completely clean and have no crazy people on it. It's San Francisco. It's going to be a little bit of an adventure. There are problems that I can solve and problems that I can't solve. And figuring that out requires continually going back and referencing our values and being clear about our priorities and the difficult trade-offs that we need to make.
So sticking with the car thing, should we expect to see or would you like to see fewer parking spaces or higher fines if you violate that?
So what I'd like to do is to look at parking as an incredibly valuable real estate asset that needs to be managed. Right now, the streets of San Francisco are about a third of the land area of the city. And about 15% of the spaces in San Francisco are managed. The rest are given away free, right? I give free rent to allow people to store their stuff on public land for most of the streets of San Francisco.
Doesn't that bump up, though, against what you were saying earlier about disproportionate effect on low-income people? I mean, if you we're working three jobs and you've got kids and you're trying to make ends meet and you're paying exorbitant rent and you get a $90 or whatever it is parking ticket for, you know, street cleaning or whatever it might be. I mean, that's a real problem for you.
It's a problem for me, but that assumes that the way that we manage the transportation system currently is equitable. Right now, you know, we run the transportation system a lot through asking people to pay for muni and asking people to pay sales taxes. Our current funding is deeply regressive, and the motorists who use our streets pay a tiny fraction of the cost of providing services to motorists, particularly compared to the way that users of other modes pay for our streets. So one of the things that we want to do is to look systemically at how is the transportation system funded, who should pay for it, And to what degree should those payments be related to the intensity of use, but also to the ability to pay?
And voters just passed Proposition D, which is going to create a tax on Lyft and Uber rides. And that's going to be used how? How is that? About $35 million a year.
That's right.
For Muni?
Yeah, and the bulk of that as was...
And that's a progressive tax, right?
Well, yes and no. So it's a flat fixed tax on each Uber or Lyft trip. So, for example, that is not a tax on when Uber and Lyft are driving around empty. And it's the same tax whether it is somebody traveling alone in Uber paralleling the 38 Geary, or a low-income person in the Bayview who needs to get to the T-line or to get to Caltrain. So there are, again, there are ways of looking at how we pay for transportation that can be more or less equitable and produce better or worse results in terms of the public good.
Would you like to see the city have more control or any control, really, over Lyft and Uber? There's some 40,000 vehicles on our streets, and the California Public Utilities Commission regulates that. We don't really have much control over that.
We have no control over that whatsoever, which is really unfortunate. And one thing that I'm eager to do is to partner with cities like Los Angeles and San Jose to work with the State Public Utilities Commission to give cities the right bumpers for managing Uber and Lyft and other forms of private mobility that operate in the public right-of-way.
What does bumpers mean?
Bumpers means it would be inappropriate to let cities simply run amok and to have Uber and Lyft have completely, radically, bizarrely different regulations every time they cross a municipal boundary. But at the same time, we need some ability to be able to regulate and manage them so that we can capture the upside of ride hail while minimizing the downsides.
All right, let's go to some listener comments here. Rusty tweets, do you support truly free Muni for youth? No clipper required and no fare checking as backed by the school board.
So fare policy is another one of these really juicy, fun, complicated topics that I'm eager to look into as well in order to make sure that we have the right revenue that we need in order to provide service, but also do so in a way that is equitable. So Muni brings in about $200 million a year in fare revenue. So it's a lot of money and a big portion of paying for our service. Right now we provide free Muni to seniors, disabled people, and low and moderate income youth. It's probably not that expensive to simply allow all kids to be able to ride free on Muni. I'd still love to get all kids a clipper card in order to train them to be transit riders and also help them explore not just the Muni bus and rail corridors, but the whole city and BART and the East Bay. So these are things that we're certainly interested in talking about. We're also really interested in employer-sponsored pass programs like Santa Clara County does, whereby employers write a check every year to Muni in exchange for getting free fast passes to 100% of their employees, whether they want that or not. So San Francisco State has a great program that is certainly a fantastic model. We've seen really positive results from that. So does USF for their students.
All right. Peter tweets, I'd love to hear more about Muni becoming a regional operator. In Jeff's interview with Heather Knight of the Chronicle, he dropped a subtle bombshell about Muni going regional to Stanislaus County to serve its workforce. Is that serious? And what did he have in mind when he mentioned that?
So that bombshell comment was indeed intended that way, but it was in response to what I'm hearing from our bus operators, who by and large are increasingly having to live far distances. They are some of the safest, most skilled drivers in the industry. Muni buses aren't really designed for travel on freeways, but just as Google and Facebook run commuter shuttle programs to the outer suburbs, we might want to think about that as an employer if it is the way that we can attract and retain the phenomenally skilled workforce that we need.
So you're sounds like a big supporter of what the Lyft, I mean not Lyft, but you know, Facebook, Google, the buses, the Apple buses. You think that's a good idea?
Well, I am much more interested in what our Metropolitan Transportation Commission is talking about, which is transitioning that private employee-only regional shuttle system to become an actual public regional shuttle system where employers and public transit agencies collaborate with each other and open those buses up to the public.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Sue in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi, and welcome to the MTA. I actually serve on the NPA-CAC, so I'm certain we'll probably meet each other at some point. And I'm really glad to hear you talking about transitioning to the public regional transportation system, because my concern is these private companies that are coming in and using our public right-of-way in violation of the law. And I want to know how you're going to deal with that as the executive director of the MTA. We're talking about the public, the Google shuttle buses in the public bus stops, which remains a violation of the California Vehicle Code. Unlimited numbers of these Google shuttle buses. We can't regulate the numbers. We have our transit-only lanes, which are, according to state law definitions and public law, local public law, these are transit-only lanes for public transit vehicles only, and that should be Muni, Golden Gate Transit, and our locally regulated cabs. And yet the MTA wants to make some of these available to unlimited numbers of private buses, casino buses, tour buses, Google shuttles, et cetera, everything.
Okay, let's give him a chance to respond to that.
Okay, your response.
So again, my task is to get the highest public good out of our limited public right-of-way. So that means prioritizing the most efficient services and prioritizing the most public services. I don't care whether a private vehicle is an individual driving her own vehicle or a Google bus. What I care about is how many passengers there are. If we have excess capacity at our bus stops and in our transit-only lanes, I'm happy to give that away if it means moving more people. But if those private services get in the way of moving our public services or allowing our public buses to get the public bus stops, then we've got a problem. And so in order to make a decision, what I want is data. I need good data to make sure that our highest priority services are never being delayed, whether that's by individual private vehicles or by private Google shuttles.
Well, they are. I've taken photographs. they are getting in the way, and it's a violation of the law. So what I'm hearing you say is that you don't care about what the law is, and my argument back at you is that we need this space to prioritize our public transit because that's our best way of fighting the climate crisis and income inequality, and because I can't get on a Google shuttle bus.
Yeah. All right. We sort of addressed that a little bit, but is that something that, you know, is an evolving policy in your mind, Jeff?
Oh, always evolving, right? Mobility is changing constantly, and in order to keep up with it, we need to be clear about what our values are and to manage for the best possible outcomes, to collect data continually, to make adjustments, and to report on that data in order to continue to build trust with the public.
Sue, thanks very much for that. She mentioned climate change. Cars, of course, are big emitters of CO2. Contributing to climate change. What are your thoughts about that? And, you know, it's all about getting people, I guess, out of their cars or more people into cars so there's fewer of them on the road.
So here in San Francisco, transportation is about half of the city's greenhouse gas emissions. And while buildings and energy are getting a lot more efficient, transportation remains stubbornly about the same, which means it is a rapidly growing percentage of the city's total CO2 greenhouse gas emissions. And of that, it is largely personal driving. It's not SFO. It's people driving our own cars. We need to move quickly to decarbonize mobility. Muni is already the greenest fleet in the country. So we've done really well on the transit side of Muni, of the SFMTA. Where we're struggling is all of those private cars out there.
Question about housing. We talked about that earlier. There's a proposal to build, I think, more than 500 units of housing on Muni's Potrero Yard, which happens to be right across from KQED there on Mariposa and Bryant. What's the status of that, and should other properties that Muni owns, you know, be considered for that?
So our real estate division at SFMTA is looking very carefully at every single property that the SFMTA owns to see what could we do with that. So we've got really big bus and rail yards. Some of them are not in the best locations for housing, and all of them have a lot of complexity at the ground level. Not always easy to put a lot of building columns in a bus or rail yard. But they have figured out how to do that at the Potrero facility, and that is moving forward. We've got a detailed design that seems to work, not only for over 500 new units of housing, but also dramatic improvements for the bus yard itself.
And what kind of timeline are we looking at for that?
Next couple of years.
And when construction begins, when?
I don't know the answer.
You say the next couple of years, you mean that it begins or that it will actually be done? Not sure.
Not sure.
You haven't started yet.
I also have not started this job.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We'll get back to you on that. All right, back to the phones. And Tiffany in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi, thanks. I'm a longtime resident here. I have teenagers and I'm a school teacher. And I came with one question, but now I've been listening. I have two other things. The tech buses really impact my life, just to say. Like, they impact my life. And when I see that they took 126 cars off the road, I know that they also took 126 apartments from people like myself who can't afford that. So I think that's a really huge issue that needs to be considered in a different way from what I just heard from you saying that. But I live in the southeast side of the city, 94134, and we are serviced mostly by the 9, the 44, and the 8. But it's really hard to get anywhere other than downtown in a quick way from here. It's like a 2-3 bus sort of situation. I'm curious how you're going to expand muni service to support this area and potentially rail service. The other problem, and I don't know how this impacts your job and your position, is the 280 and 101 freeways, they only afford us a couple of arteries to get out of the neighborhood, and those get really impacted during bad weather. So just curious.
Okay, well, that's Caltrans, so we can take that off.
yes, I'm glad that I...
We need to work together a lot more.
Yeah.
Because we are stuck often if there's, like, flooding. We can't get out of our neighborhood. We have, like, one street to get out, you know?
There is a plan for what I think they call the hairball, which is where 280 and right by Cesar Chavez there, 280 and 101 sort of converge. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that at all, but the other question also about just expanding service.
So part of the challenge in San Francisco is that the and from the transit system perspective is that the historical system was rooted around the assumption that the only place people needed to go to was the financial district. And so we have what is largely a radial system that then had a overlay in the mid-1970s of a circumferential system. And we have a lot of transit lines, not all of which run frequently enough. So as travel patterns have changed, and particularly the massive amount of job growth that we've seen south of the county line, people need to go a lot of different places. And what that means is focusing on taking the highest ridership lines that serve each neighborhood and providing enough frequency in all of those that people can transfer. This is how other cities have dramatically increased their transit ridership. It's how we can serve a neighborhood like Viz Valley or the other neighborhoods in the southeastern quadrant of the city, taking advantage of connections to Balboa Park Station, as well as the improvements that we're making on streets like San Bruno Avenue and the Portola, and on Potrero Street and connecting into the Van Ness Busway. So there are some significant improvements that are occurring in the southeastern quadrant. Those improvements are not necessarily going to be adding new lines, but will significantly improve speed and reliability and frequency on the core lines such that you can get almost anywhere, but it will require a transfer for a lot of trips.
How much federal money do we need for these things?
I will not be speaking to federal policy at the moment. Things are not good for mobility at the federal level.
Even with Nancy Pelosi as speaker?
Well, Nancy Pelosi as speaker is fantastic, but as you know, appropriations require approval from both the House and the Senate, and the executive branch is responsible for actually getting that money out to the municipalities. And we've seen a significant slowdown in getting money that has been allocated.
You have floated a lot of ideas, not just in this hour, but even before you got here, since you've been named as the new director, cheaper cable car rides for kids, banning right-hand turns on red lights downtown and in some neighborhoods, a new kind of clipper card. I mean, is it possible to have just too many ideas in the way that you might lose your focus or create too many enemies for, you know, from people who don't like any one or two or three of those ideas?
So part of the reason I throw out ideas is to get people to think differently about transportation. And I want to emphasize, I throw out ideas. This is not my plan. Right?
A lot of them on Twitter.
A lot of them on Twitter. I've been a little active on Twitter the last couple of weeks, in part to take advantage of the attention that my arrival has received in order to set a new tone that is more open and transparent and that puts ideas out there. I am committed to taking advantage of the fact that I've got phenomenal directors in each of my divisions and knowing that my job is largely to listen closely to them and to clear a path for them. That my job is a lot about making the external politics work in order for them to do their good staff work. They have a very good sense of what the actual priority should be.
We haven't talked at all about the fact that you're openly gay. There aren't a lot of openly gay transit directors, I don't think. We did have an airport director in San Francisco, John Martin, a few years ago. But, you know, what difference does that make, do you think, if any, in terms of the way you think about transportation or equity, discrimination, those sorts of things?
Well, that's a good question. So I think that, particularly having come of age in the 80s, when the federal government talked openly about quarantining people like me, that gives you a different perspective. I mean, I'm a white male and cisgendered. I can hold a tremendous amount of privilege in any room that I enter, but I also know that that privilege is conditional. For people like me, I think you have two choices: to either develop bitterness or to develop compassion. And I've tried to follow the latter path, which causes me to really look at people where they are. Where are they coming from? What do they need? How are they different than me and the same?
And some thick skin probably helps too.
And some thick skin. I've experienced a lot of bullying in my day. And I can handle just about anyone.
That's no doubt a prerequisite for this job. Brittany in San Francisco, you're next. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. I am really excited about this program today, and I really appreciate both of you talking about a lot of the things you've discussed today. I live in a district where I'm near the Embarcadero, so you both know where I live. And there has been a really tremendous number of fatalities along the Embarcadero, people killed by drivers over the years. There was one just last year. And I'm wondering if there's sort of a lack of political will for safety improvements for cyclists and pedestrians and a better division between drivers and other folks using roadways. I'm curious what the MTA is able to do when maybe our elected officials aren't really willing to step up and prioritize those issues.
So that's a fantastic question as well, and one that's very dear to me. In San Francisco, already over 25 people have been killed through traffic violence this year, and we've injured over 3,000. I'm sorry. It's the equivalent of a 747 going down every 2 months, and that's unacceptable. But it's also the core tension that we face in mobility. There is a direct tension between convenience and safety. Safety is a pretty straightforward science at its root. The human body has a design speed of about 13 miles an hour, so we can withstand a trip and fall at our peak sustained running speed. But above that speed, the body starts breaking down. And because the force of impact is related, well, you know, kinetic energy equals 1/2 times the mass of the objects times the square of their velocity. So the square of the velocity part of the equation is the most important part of the equation. As speed increases, fatalities increase multiplicatively. And so we can eliminate traffic fatalities, but at the expense of the convenience of motorists who want to get quickly from A to B. And there is no easy way of solving this problem of physics.
Brittany, does that respond to your question?
Well, I think the thing that I speak to a lot of friends and colleagues about is that oftentimes we reach out to the folks that are elected to solve these problems. And for whatever reason, we don't get a response at all, or the response is, we're working on it. And this feels very urgent to so many of us. And I know it feels urgent to both of you. And so I guess my question is, if we're not able to reach out to the people who are elected to handle these problems, are there any thoughts about who else at the MTA or anyone else in the city that we can approach and talk to about pretty basic safety stuff?
Yeah. So, and one of the things that made me realize that I could actually accept this job is that uniquely, the MTA reports to its own board. The SFMTA board is appointed by the mayor for term and has independence from the rest of city politics. They have told me clearly to use them in order to help create better outcomes for the city, even in the face of local opposition. Similarly, Mayor Breed, watching her performance around the Navigation Center on the Embarcadero, my office is right across the street from it. It affects my view. And yet I know that the Navigation Center's work to deal with some of the most acute issues around homelessness in the city. They reduce crime. They provide a critical service. That project experienced extreme levels of opposition, and the mayor held her ground. She is tenacious. And I've heard, you know, similar stories from members of the Board of Supervisors. I think there is a unique window of opportunity right now in San Francisco to make some hard choices, even when they're politically unpopular.
All right, Brittany, thanks very much for the comments. And to all of you for great comments by Twitter, email, phone calls, and so on. Jeffrey Tillman, I wish you luck. I know you're going to start in a couple of weeks, 2.5 weeks, but it sounds like you're very much already got your sleeves rolled up.
I've had no choice. Hopefully I'll have a restful Thanksgiving.
Okay, good. Thanks very much, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. More to come in the next hour. Stick around.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.